Would like to welcome everybody to the study session of the Mesa City Council for Thursday, October 22nd, 2009. We'll begin this morning's meeting. Well, first of all, I'd like to excuse Councilman Richens, who I believe is en route, and we'll be here a little bit later. We'll begin with item number one, hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction on whether to pursue a program to... Oh, excuse me. Thank you, Councilmember Summers. We'd like to call to order the special meeting, council meeting for Thursday, October 22nd, 2009. Thank you. The purpose for this meeting is to take action on a resolution that, as you recall, was not ready by last Monday's council meeting, but is important that we take action on it. So I'll entertain a motion to take action on approving and authorizing the city manager to execute an intergovernmental agreement with the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community for the disbursement of pass-through grants to the United Food Bank in the amount of $175,000 and Hacienda Healthcare in the amount of $300,000. So, have a motion from Councilmember Summers, a second from the Vice Mayor. Is there any discussion? Any request to speak, Ms. Crocker?
No request, Mayor.
Okay. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests from citizens present to speak?
No, sir.
Okay. I have a motion to adjourn, a second by the Vice Mayor. All in favor?
Aye.
Special meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Now we'll move into the study session agenda.
We didn't play the mayor's walk.
That's right. We should have played. It would have been longer than the meeting. We'll hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on whether to pursue a program to advertise on bus shelters.
All right. Good morning, Mayor and Council. My name is Mike James. I'm here with Gordon Sheffield. I'm our zoning administrator, and we would like to follow up with a discussion and that occurred a couple months ago at the Community and Neighborhood Services Committee. The advertising at transit shelters is an issue that past councils have discussed, but it's at those times they chose not to move forward. We're back again. Times have changed a little bit, and we're reevaluating this and looking at it and are seeking some policy direction. The two main points that I would make before we get into some of the legal background is that the real reason for this is for the city to implement some new capital transit facilities at minimal cost, and secondarily, it is an opportunity for some revenue, but primarily the opportunity is here for to get some new transit shelters out on the street to deal with our climate and shade issues. And we think we can do that through this advertising program. With that, I'll hand it over to Gordon to go over a couple of the backgrounds on our zoning and planning issues related to the issue.
Mayor, council members, what we're talking about here is requires an amendment to the city's sign ordinance. The reason for that is basically the city has a prohibition against off-site signs. An off-site sign is defined as pretty much anything that advertises something that's not directly related to the parcel on which the sign rests. The city council in 1986 decided that billboards in general were a problem, and they thought that that was, quite frankly, visual pollution. They thought that it caused a certain amount of sign clutter on the community, and they thought that it strongly affected the aesthetics of Mesa. And so, and they thought that the best way to address that particular issue was to create an outright prohibition on off-site signs. And from that, there was a prohibition that was done. Now, shortly afterwards, you can imagine the billboard industry probably was not real happy with the council undertaking such an action, and they filed suit. That suit went through the various legal channels and eventually wound up in the Ninth Circuit Court. The Ninth Circuit Court found for the city of Mesa, this case was combined with a similar one from Tucson. The Tucson council had acted in a similar fashion about the same time that the Mesa Council had done the same thing. And because of that court action, because of that prohibition, the council subsequent to the 86 council have strongly endorsed the continuation of that policy, that prohibition on off-site signs. When this issue has raised itself previously, we would advise council about that prohibition. We advised them that our legal counsel at the time this court case was going through had advised us that it was very difficult to sit here and try to get any kind of hedge or any kind of wedge into that prohibition to create kind of any exceptions to off-site prohibitions at all. So part of that was kind of into the reasoning why they kept that prohibition. Things have changed a little bit. Since that 1991 Ninth Circuit Court ruling, the city of Los Angeles had undertaken a similar prohibition on off-site signs, but they created an exception for transit shelters. The transit industry also brought suit against the city of Los Angeles for that. That case also wound its way through the court system and eventually wound up in the Ninth Circuit again. The Ninth Circuit found that that was a reasonable exception to prohibitions on billboards. And for that reason, we feel that there may be an opportunity here for creating a similar exception in the Mesa sign ordinance.
All right. So with that background, at the direction previously to look into what some of the other cities are doing, we really have two good local examples, and that's the city of Phoenix and the city of Chandler. Chandler probably being the most related to where we are here in Mesa. In Chandler's programs, they have 100 shelters available for advertising. And based on the demand, not all of those are being used at one time, but they do have up to 50 shelters where they can advertise. In 2008, they kind of had a range of what they were bringing in per year between $54,000 and $84,000 for that advertising. City of Phoenix, on the other hand, has 2,500 shelters approximately with a different kind of a contract. They have a contract that brings them back 50% of the net advertising receipts with a minimum guarantee of $1.5 million, so it's quite a bigger scale. Again, we have got some additional examples of other cities. Just wanted to put a couple examples in here. This is an example in Chandler. You can see it's a newer shelter. It's got attractive advertising panels on the side. Pretty good example, in my opinion. Here's another example where what you can see is, in addition to the transit shelter, you've got a kiosk. And typically these kiosks have advertising on two of the three panels, and the third panel that doesn't face the street on the back would have a transit system map. This is an opportunity where we could go in where we have existing shelters on high-frequency streets where we could go in and include this additional infrastructure on some of our existing shelters. Another example, you've probably seen this a lot if you've been to Phoenix. It's an integrated two-faced shelter, kind of a little bit of an older style, but you can see that from the street perspective or the driving perspective, you really can see those signs pretty well, and it does provide pretty good shelter for the transit patrons. This last example is, one of the things we're going to be working with is some of the restrictions that we might want to put in place to make sure that the advertising is consistent with a positive community image that we want to maintain here in Mesa. So we looked at the two models, Chandler and Phoenix, and we identified a potential model. Obviously, as we work this through, we would continue to work with legal and some of our contracting folks to make sure that the operating procedures worked best with the way that we operate today in our city. But basically, we'd identify those locations where we could put in kiosks or new transit shelters. We would enter into an agreement with an advertising vendor who would install these shelters and then sell the transit advertising and maintain all of that advertising in the shelters. Obviously, we would establish a cleaning and maintenance routine that's consistent with our level of service and work out the financial payment scheduling. Some of the things we heard from Phoenix, particularly who's been doing this for a while, is that we really need to limit our advertising to those speech or graphics that propose a commercial transaction. And by doing that, it goes back to some of the legal issues with what we want to restrict. So if you have questions on that, we'll let you get back with our legal team to answer some of those detailed legal issues. Particularly, we've got a list of what I would call restrictions, where things we do not want to be advertising. Again, to keep this the positive community image that we want related to our city, our transit shelters. You know, things like we don't want to advertise the use of alcohol, tobacco, violence. Those issues where we want to again keep that positive image. One of the interesting things with
are these restrictions that are commonly used by other cities?
Yes, or this is exactly.
Yeah. Are there any things that are any of these that are unique to our proposal?
No, sir. These are all taken directly from the city of Phoenix, word for word.
Okay.
So, finally, usually these agreements give the city the right to utilize the unsold advertising space. So that's a benefit as well. As you can imagine, there are certainly potential benefits. We would get more shelters and transit amenities out on the street for our patrons. It could provide a small revenue source as we got down the road a couple years. You know, we would be able to work out those maintenance agreements. Having those additional shelters would be a benefit for increasing use and ridership in our system. And again, we could use the additional unsold space to advertise city events, something like any activities that are going on at the MAC or something like that, that were commercial. Obviously, there's going to be some other considerations related to the impact that it'll have visually in the community. There could be a negative response from some people who don't like additional commercial advertising. And there is some additional cost for staff to take that on, establish those new locations for pads, for transit shelters, and the ongoing maintenance of the program. Just to give you a little bit of background on our inventory, today we have approximately 219 shelters, and they're a mix of all different kinds. They're full-size, mini shelters. We've got some older three-legged, what we call standards. So we have a real mix out there. We've got specific shelters in the downtown. We have a handful of artist shelters, as you know. And these costs that you've shown here for operation and maintenance, this is for a full-size shelter, which basically gets cleaned twice a week. It's about $780 a year. Based on where the shelter is, it may need more or less maintenance, depending on just the use. And again, on O&M, it's approximately about $150,000 that we spend today on our existing shelters. So we're bringing this forward as a policy issue. We'd like your input and direction. If you were to have us move forward, we would have to update our sign ordinance, as Gordon mentioned earlier, and then that would be taken to P&Z for consideration, then back to the council for a review. So there's a little bit of a time that it would take to get that done in the future. So with that, I'd open it up for any questions or comments.
Hey, Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you. I had something that didn't make sense. You just said how much a shelter costs to maintain O&M, but then on page 12 you said cleaning and maintenance by vendor. So is the cleaning and maintenance going to be by the vendor, or is it going to be this $780 a year
item? Well, Phoenix and Chandler do it differently. So we could work that either way. I think initially we were thinking that you would have the vendor do that, but we heard from Phoenix that sometimes it's better just to have your own contractor do it because you can control it better. So that's something we would really decide moving forward.
But the cost of that would be
on the vendor.
Included in the, right. Okay.
Yes, it would be to the vendor.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a comment. I really appreciate all the work that has been done on this, as well as Councilmember Higgins advancing this issue. The last time that there was a more extensive discussion on this was back in the late 90s. And at that time, the legal issues were first and foremost, really, in terms of dealing with the billboard industry. And at that time, there was still a strong feeling in the community about billboards. It was a very much community-based movement to limit the size of signs and billboards and things like that. The Phoenix model had not really yet been tested very well in the courts. And so I think since that time, obviously with the ruling in the court last year, that is very helpful for us. The Phoenix Ordinance in terms of the content has been vetted thoroughly by the courts. So I think the time is appropriate to move forward. As we discussed in our committee, we want to encourage use of mass transit in all its forms. We do have a population that will be aging, and many of us will be reached a point where we will have to use public transportation. We want to make it as comfortable as we can for the community, and I think the staff is proposing a direction that makes very good sense in terms of revenue to the city to operate and maintain them, but most importantly, providing a public benefit that hopefully will not have the legal baggage that other cities have had to work their way through in the past. So I appreciate committee chair moving it forward and the staff doing the work, and I will support moving ahead.
Thank you, Councilmember. Any other questions? Okay. Direction. Any objections to having the staff move forward with a proposal that they can come back with us? Is anyone awake? Yeah, let's start at the beginning. Who is breathing? Okay. Councilmember Richens.
I don't know. I think it's somewhat hypocritical to limit signage and billboards as much as we do, and then let it be the sole purview of government to advertise at a bus shelter. I love that there's additional revenue for more bus shelters. I support that. We need more bus shelters, but I just don't feel real comfortable with this.
If I could ask you, so would you, just so I can understand, would you be opposed to this proposal, or would you propose revisiting the entire billboard?
I would support advertising on our bus shelters.
Okay, but what about the other, you mentioned the general prohibition. Would you support and maybe I'm pushing this too far, would you support revisiting the entire advertising or billboard situation? Or
no.
Okay, I gotcha. Just want to make sure I understood. Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, the reason I brought this up with Neighborhood Services Subcommittee with Councilmember Kavanaugh and Councilmember Richens was, you know, as you drive around the city and you see in the summer people standing in the shade of a telephone pole waiting for a bus, it's just like, it just doesn't seem fair. You know, first of all, I'm riding the bus, and now I can't, there's no shade I'm standing in, you know, and people are lined up, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who's seen that, lined up in the shade of a telephone pole. It's just, so I said, well, what can we do to, you know, put some shelters up in highly used routes where people don't have to do that? And as Councilmember Kavanaugh said, as we population ages and we might be using mass transportation more often, you know, that's even more important to have somewhere to sit while you're waiting for a bus, because everyone doesn't have their four-wheel walker like my mom does, who just turns around and sits down on it. So anyway, that's why we brought this forward, and I really think this could be a way to increase our shelters without where we couldn't currently do it with our budget. So that was my biggest reason. Councilmember Kavanaugh, you said a lot of other great things that I totally agree with, and that's why we brought this forward to the full council, and that's why I support this measure. Thanks.
So as this person is standing behind the telephone pole, you would support stapling up a sign which would provide both advertising and shade?
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay. I want to make sure I understand that too. Okay. Councilmember Summers.
I seem to have gotten into the discussion about number of bus shelters that we could support with this revenue. How much revenue are we estimating that we can generate with this?
I'm estimating
somewhere around $200,000.
Well, if we were similar to Chandler, I would imagine if we had 100 shelters out there available, would be very similar to what Chandler brought in. You know, the 50 to 80,000.
Okay. So we have 100 shelters out there, or 200 shelters?
Well, we have 200 out there today, but they're not what I would call, you know, they don't have provisions where you could go and put advertising on them.
Gotcha. Some this will work for, others need some more work. So initially 100 shelters.
Yeah.
So the 54,000 to 84,000, that's our cut of the revenue?
Yeah,
that's our net?
That was their net.
Okay. And how much are shelters costing these days to construct that would be
Depending on the size, they can be, what is it, 15 to about 20,000. Yeah. They're expensive.
So we can get a couple out a year on those. Do we anticipate just using this revenue for improving support of our capital, meaning the bus shelters, or is this revenue that could be utilized to help improve service delivery and operating maintenance?
That's not a discussion we've had with the manager, actually. So,
I think we'd have to look at the contract, the terms of the contract, before we'd want to commit these funds to some operational. But it's a possibility if you have a longer term.
And I wasn't suggesting that we commit at this point. I was just asking if that was a possibility, because in addition to to somebody standing out in the blazing heat, another element we have are long wait times between buses. That's another reason that folks are standing in the heat.
Or preserving routes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, there's all those things we could look at down the road.
Okay. Thank you.
Vice Mayor?
I'm getting a mix here, trying to understand. We're talking about possibly just getting straight revenue for the advertising, but also I see you're talking about vendor pays for capital installation. They install more shelters, and with that, and then whatever net revenue after that, we would get a portion. However we work the deal is what we're talking about.
That's correct.
Now, shelters are just advertising. They're just the kiosks. When we're talking capital.
Well, let's be careful. I don't think we've come up with a business plan. Yeah. Otherwise, they're going to have vendor-provided, you know, operations or capital.
That's the discussion.
Yeah, the first discussion today really is a council direction to allow advertising bus shelters. Then we would go through the P&Z process, get that approval. Then I think we would come back to council and talk about a business plan. You know, which would work best, having the vendor take on the responsibilities or just providing us a revenue stream that then we could go and contract out. I mean, there's a variety of different models we can use. But I don't think we're ready. Today we're not seeking that direction. Really, today we're seeking just the direction to move forward to amend the sign ordinance to get the allow for the advertising off-site.
Okay, well, then I personally have I struggle with visual clutter. That is a problem for me. I wasn't around when the ordinance was done back in the late 80s or whenever it was. But I struggle with too much visual clutter, but yet I understand the need for getting more shelters. I'm curious to see what the model would be, what we're talking about. But I also have another question, because it said to require that be limited to commercial advertising, commercial transaction. What about community activities? We reserve the right to maintain some of it that's unused, but limiting just to commercial, I want to be able to have some to advertise community events and stuff.
There would be some restrictions. Maybe, Debbie, can you kind of give them an overview of your findings?
Yeah, Mayor, Council, that is something we would look at. In terms of city events, yes, we could. In terms of deciphering between this social event and that social event, if it's not a city event.
If it's not city-sponsored.
Yes, then that's going to be more challenging, and we cannot obviously pick and choose which events. Non-commercial arena. There are certain restrictions, and I think, like the city manager said, right now we don't have definitive answers on each one of these. This is something that's a work in progress. We know there are cases that say that a city can allow or restrict to only commercial speech. Going beyond that, you're going to have to look at the facts of the actual desire of the council.
Okay. Well, I still struggle with advertising clutter, but I'm curious to see what kind of model it would be as far as getting more shelters in place. That's important to me. And so it's a tough balancing act between visual clutter, in my perspective, and having more shelters.
Okay. I'm not hearing a clear direction on where we should go here. Councilmember Summers.
I think we should at least continue with the discussion. I concur with the Vice Mayor. It would probably be helpful to get an idea of where the business plan might head, because I think it would be important I don't want to speak for the Vice Mayor, but for myself, I'd like to know what that revenue might be used for, how we're going to realize some type of public benefit from the advertising beyond just raising $84,000 a year.
So,
Councilmember Higgins?
Well, my thought process was always that the revenue generated would be used to put in more bus shelters. So the whole thing would be maintaining the shelters and putting more shelters up where they're needed.
20.
So, I mean, right now we have 575 stops, 259, right? Some big number. There's like 579 short, 794 stops, 219 shelters. I don't know what typically shelter to stop ratio is. What would, you know, are they usually just on the big intersections where more people come? I don't know how you decide that. But I would think we should at least be at half is what my guess would be, and that we're like way under the typical city of our size for bus shelters for stops. Would you agree with that?
Just for example, the city of Phoenix a few years ago worked real hard to get over that 50% mark. So, but they were doing approximately 200 per year. So, and obviously they had a much bigger budget with their advertising. But, yeah, 50% is kind of a good benchmark.
And so right now we're like at 30%. So we're far off actually with sheer numbers. So we have a long way to go just to get to 50% of our bus stops to be covered. So I just think it's a good idea.
And by the nodding of the heads during a couple of comments, I think that the direction is to move forward and let's come up with a plan. Let's see what we've got. But I think we need some more information. I'm a little concerned and troubled that it seems like there's a lot of hassle and a lot of cost, and I'm not sure, I'm still undecided whether the benefit's worth it. I mean, I know 80,000 is 80,000, but as the vice mayor and others have said, there is a cost with clutter. I mean, that's a real cost that the community will pay, and I'm just not sure that it seems like a lot of hassle for a little bit of benefit, relatively speaking. But I'd like to get more information. So I think the direction, unless I have real objection, is to let's move forward, maybe come up with some more particular ideas, options, and I don't know whether you want to take that, initiate the process or come back to us.
Well, yeah. Mayor and Council, if the direction where I hear, we'll move forward with the issue with the sign ordinance. And moving forward to that amendment, then what we'll do is really, we can talk. There's two part. I mean, there's the business plan also is going to rely upon what the market is also, suggesting. Right now, it probably isn't real strong. I know in other communities I've worked with, we've restricted the advertising of bus shelters in certain parts of the city, more the commercial, where you would expect to see, advertising and.
Right,
those elements as opposed to maybe being out in more in the neighborhood, in the residential
areas. More residential.
Areas. So we were able to limit that. But it was helpful. It did go a long ways towards doing two things. One, it helped to offset the cost of building shelters. And then two, provided some funds to actually help maintain those over a period of time.
Yeah.
And we did like 5-year contracts, so the cost of the shelters was spread out over that period.
And I think what I feel from the majority is not a complete negative feeling toward advertising as a concept.
Okay.
But some unanswered questions as to how that would play out.
And that's fair. And we probably haven't. We've been focused on this element. We can come back.
We're over the first hump, the willingness to at least explore the advertising, and because we see those potential benefits. But there's some big gaps.
Right. So when this comes back, as this moves comes back from PNZ, we'll be in a position to present the other side of it too.
Okay, Councilmember Richens.
Just as you apparently looks like it's going forward. So as we do that, we need to be really sensitive about the placement of these, that we're not blocking other businesses' signage. And I mean, again, we've gone out of our way to restrict signage a lot. A-frames, and it's very difficult to even get a sign through our department sometimes. So we need to do whatever we can to help enhance our local businesses that are there.
And I think that's a good point. I think Mr. Brady raised a good point, too, about that made me feel a little more comfortable. I live sort of along Brown Road, and there are bus stops, and I can't see it being appropriate in the middle of a citrus grove, but I can see it being appropriate in a commercial zone on Main Street. It fits in. So I think there's a lot of considerations to come,
up with. What will happen, at least what I've seen in the past, is the bus shelters with advertising in commercial areas actually help pay for the sheltered buses in the residential areas that doesn't have advertising. So it can work that way.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, those are all issues we need to bring back and talk with the council about.
All righty. I think you have your direction for right now. Thank you.
Bloody
the next item. Hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on amending the livestock regulations.
Okey-dokey.
All right, we're all awake now. We're not going to horse around with this one.
Oh.
What?
You're taking this on.
Okay. Mr. Sheffield.
Mayor,
please
council.
Bring some sanity to this process.
If you're depending on me for sanity, you need to look someplace else. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to provide it. Mayor, council, this is the second time we've been back. We talked to you folks in February. We talked to the subcommittee in January about amending the livestock regulations. This kind of comes from a sub-area plan that prior council had passed. They created two goals. One was to decriminalize livestock regulations, and then the second goal of that was to try to develop the regulations in a manner that was more consistent with rural communities. We took a look at that, and you've asked us to go to the community with a red line document, and we did that. Just a real quick background on the existing livestock regulations. Currently, the minimum lot size in order to be able to have livestock or large animals in general is one full acre, 43,560 square feet. On that, you're permitted two head of livestock. That can be any combination of cattle, horses, mules, sheep, llamas, goats, and swine in any variety, whether it's a pig, hog, or a shoat, is prohibited. The permitted number of animals increases at a ratio of one head for every half acre, again, consistent with that two head per acre theme. When we presented this to the Community and Neighborhood Services Committee last January, they directed us to go forth as follows. They would ask us to make allowances for student projects like 4-H and FFA, as well as making allowances for juvenile animals to stay with their parents or parent animal. Currently the code just it didn't address that. They asked us to update and broaden the listed animals so when people wanted to keep, for example, a zebra, the code didn't address zebras. We would broaden the ordinance so we could address that situation.
As a former basketball official, I thank you for including zebras in that.
You always got to take care of the zebras. They asked us to go forward and look at the idea of reducing the minimum lot size from a full acre to 35,000 square feet. In addition to that, we came up with a point system that allow proportional increases for smaller animals and yet maintain a ratio of large animals similar to what we have now. We presented that to council. Council said, go ask the community to see what they think. And so we sent notice of this to affected property owners. We sent out at least 160 letters and emails to folks who would be directly affected by these types of changes. We noted the comments, and we've come back to advise you of those results. What we found is staff, we misheard you folks about chickens. And just to address this question very quickly and make sure there's no misunderstandings, staff had initially proposed that the minimum lot size to keep chicken and barnyard fowl would increase from 0 to 35,000 square feet. We were wrong. We were dead wrong on that one. We got significant opposition. We got it quick. We got it fast. We got it a lot. We heard that, and we backed off. So there are no changes proposed to chicken or barnyard fowl.
Us that the chicken lobby is strong and active out there.
Yes, I am. Okay. That couldn't put it any better.
Okay.
Put his residence afoul.
What we also found is that there was no vocal opposition to reducing the minimum lot size to 35,000 square feet. We didn't hear any support for it, but we didn't hear any opposition either. There seems to be support for the point system that seems to provide some flexibility and some proportional response to allowing smaller animals like sheep and goat, as well as keeping the numbers seem somewhat reasonable. The one other thing that we heard about is, in particular in the Lehigh area, the Lehigh folks want more animals than two per acre. And they would like us to look at ways to try to increase that ratio, particularly in the Lehigh sub-area. And so we've come back with to ask you a little bit more about that. Just to kind of update, to make sure that we're all talking about the same thing, we did send them a red line draft of an ordinance that would make these particular changes. It would have updated the list. It broadened, for example, instead of horses, it says equines. Instead of cows and water buffalo, it says bovines. So it covers the category, but it doesn't necessarily name the specific animal. It makes allowances for infant and project animals. The large animal ratio remained at 2 per acre. Again, no changes to barnyard fowl or chickens. I can't emphasize that enough. We heard. The minimum lot area was reduced to 35,000 square feet. It did create new limits for pigeons and chinchillas because there had been an exception in the code for that. And it did create a point system to allow these smaller animals on a proportionate basis. So we've come back with another option. And what this option would do is create basically a Lehigh livestock sub-area, so to speak, where we would have two separate ratios. We would maintain the 2 head per acre ratio for the remainder of the city. They would still have a special use permit option to go forward if they wanted to increase that ratio above 2 per acre. But for the Lehigh area, we would take a look at a second ratio. And that would just be kind of standard for that area. We would define the area generally north of McKellops. We'd follow the Mesa all the way over to Val Vista. And any lots that came in from subsequent annexations would just be automatically in that particular area. We were thinking along the lines of increasing it, possibly doubling it to 4 per acre. We've heard as high as 8 per acre from some of the Lehigh folks, so we need a little bit of direction as to what that ratio should be. We also found out through some additional research that we believe that this sub-area with this separate ratio does not have to be part of the zoning code. That was a fear that we had previously, and some of the difficulties that putting this in the zoning code would generate. We think this can be a separate part of the animal regulations itself, where we would just create exceptions, basically saying this is the ratio for the city, except for, and we would define that area, and we would define the exception. And we'd do that consistently throughout the code. Question? So we have two alternatives for the Lehigh area. One is that the revisions through A through C, in other words, all of those things, except that there would be a higher ratio for the Lehigh area, possibly up to as high as 8 head per acre. The Lehigh folks, before we had come up with this just kind of concentrated in Lehigh, had thought that there might be a possibility to do a license system. We're not recommending that because we think that generates some bureaucracy, quite honestly, and from our standpoint, they would still have a special use permit option if they wanted to increase beyond doubling or whatever ratio the council feels is appropriate for that particular circumstance. So that's kind of the direction we're seeking right now, is that does council want to set a separate ratio for Lehigh? Second, if they do, what would that ratio be? To set it at 4 per acre, or do they want to go as high as 8 per acre?
Gordon, before we go to council, can you just pull up your map, though, to show? I don't know if council's seen the map of the 35,000 when that's included, just to show what areas that will impact, because I don't think it's in our packet.
Yeah, I think we saw it last time.
Is everybody familiar with? You're comfortable with that? Okay. So,
well, it'd be nice to see it again.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe. I'm just saying, okay. Why don't we just show that? Because I think that
was one of the things that raised the issue. When we started this, we thought it was only a North Mesa and Lehigh issue,
right,
and when we saw the number of 35,000 square foot lots, we realized that, you know, it's spread throughout the city, and there's especially a lot down in District 2 and even District 3.
Five.
Yeah, well, we know about District 5.
There's some in HOAs that HOAs would be able to limit their own livestock regulations. So those.
Mayor,
and Councilmember Higgins?
I don't understand what we're talking about. Are we...
Sorry.
Are we now just talking about only revising the livestock ordinance for Lehigh and not the whole city? Okay, because that I missed that.
The other portions, the other revisions would be citywide in application.
Okay.
The point system, the exceptions for infant animals and project animals, updating the system, the lowering of the threshold, all of those would be citywide in nature.
Yeah. We're only talking about the things that were in question from the last time.
Correct.
Well, and I guess one of the points of discussion last time, just to clarify, is that this ordinance applies citywide. We recognize we have these situations citywide.
Yes.
And we have some pockets, for example, out in Northeast Mesa, and even in District 2, around close to Councilmember Fender's house, where there are small pockets where there's a lot of livestock activity. Mm-hmm. But Lehigh was unique in the sense that it was the one specific general area where this was a lifestyle issue on a much larger scale.
Yes.
And that's, as I recall, that's why the discussion went to the sub-area of Lehigh, because it, even though the condition exists throughout the city in various pockets, some of them fairly large, the Lehigh area is unique in that its history and everything, it has been driven by the rural and the livestock type of environment, and that's why we were looking at differentiating or potentially differentiating Lehigh from the regulations throughout the rest of the city. Yes. Is that an accurate?
That very good summary, Mayor.
Okay, all right. Councilmember Fenter.
Thanks. I really appreciate all the work that's been done so far on this. We've made great progress. We have a lot of support from Lehigh folks. I've got to advocate for my district and those pockets that are being discussed. I think we really need, I'm supportive of giving Lehigh additional, doing the sub area, giving them the option of having more livestock. I think that's an important part. And I'll save that little argument in case it becomes an issue. But for District 2, we need an option just in case. There may be some opportunities for additional livestock. I know those little larger acre areas. I hope we don't throw out the get a license option. I'm all against more bureaucracy, but enabling some of those District 2 properties and streets, if they want to add one more, animal, without really just, clogging up this whole process. We're in a roll, we're moving in the right direction, but having that option, say it on an isolated basis, somebody does happen to come in and need three, a third horse or something like that. Without going into a lot, I have some things written down here. What I'm hoping is when we leave this meeting on this portion, that the headlines are going to read, hey, new ordinance, and I wrote this, increases property values for responsible animal owners. It's one of the few times that when we legislate, we don't take something away, we're going to give something more. This could have the potential being a great win-win for Lehigh and for other parts of the city. So I'm just hoping we keep that role and that momentum to getting it done.
So. Gordon, if I could ask, follow up on Councilmember Fenter's, the difference between the process, the regulatory process between a potential license and a use permit?
The difference is a public hearing. The license would be over the counter. They would come in.
Administrative function,
yes.
versus a public hearing
process.
Right, and the license probably puts a little more burden upon the staff to regulate it and keep it in compliance over a period of time. And it's absent a public hearing process to let.
Now, I'm assuming if we did a license, so there would be some objective standards, rely on subjective standards?
No.
The objective standards, quite honestly, probably wouldn't be that much different than the objective standards we have for sanitary management of livestock now. To remind the council, livestock privileges are privileges; they're not considered rights. It's a health.
I guess what concerns
that's
me
the challenge.
Is. Yeah, and I
should
guess
be rights and not privileges. And sorry, Mayor, to interrupt you I get fired up here on this. The reason why I jumped into.
I hadn't noticed.
And sorry, I'll take a deep breath. The reason why I got into politics and doing some of this stuff is I had to take our entire neighborhood of 12 or 14 properties through the use permit process because homes for 40 years that had livestock privileges, when council did some action back in the 90s, wiped out those privileges, affected property values. Poor old grandma and grandpa's on those streets that have had horses for 30-plus years were going, what? I can't have horses anymore. Thankfully, I encountered Mr. Gordon Sheffield and others, and we were able to get through, but it was a burdensome process. I hear the costs are quite a bit higher. So a main philosophical look at this thing is it should be privileges. And then if you exceed a privilege standard, then maybe, you know, by then, we look at some of the different ways to do it.
It
should be rights. And then when we pass a certain threshold of rights, then it should be a privilege portion. But, you know, yeah, go ahead, Mayor.
No, I'm sorry. Didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, the key, you know, I've lived this for decades. I've lived the lifestyle. You know, I long for the days that I could take my little kids out and feed the horses when they were cute and little and not giving me problems
all
the time.
My
kids.
And the horses. Because horses are just like that, too.
Right. It's a wonderful lifestyle. What I'm advocating for is just to look for every option to enable and to maintain the background and history. And, you know, I've lost a little bit in the laughter, but I think there's really some positive ways to do this. If you drive down a street and you look and you see four horses instead of two, that is not the problem. It has never been the problem. What it is do you see the smell, the odors? Do you see the flies? It's a maintenance issue. So if we can enable folks to have four, you know, maybe down the Lehigh area or some other process throughout the city, it's going to be about maintaining those properties and those animals. It isn't about what they see, because mostly all those areas are pretty well established. And so that's my tangent a little bit running.
Okay. Councilmember Richens.
You're right. And there's some areas of town that really have the infrastructure in place to be able to do the maintenance. And I think are we updating the best practices for maintenance in the changes at all?
Yes. We would relook those.
So we have that going forward too. I know this is a complicated issue. I've been working on it since I got on council. I inherited it from a council member who had been working on it for quite a while before I got here. And so I want to give a little shout out to Claudia Walters and all the hard work she did. But I've been meeting with the Lehigh residents and other people around the city to figure out and a balance between what the citizens are really wanting and asking for and what staff is comfortable doing. And I think there's a common ground in the middle. I actually made an effort to clarify that. I have a little bullet point that I made. Debbie, can I hand them out so people can look at the, that way it'll just be easier to follow, because this is kind of convoluted at times. I think what I want to propose is continue to update the health and safety and maintenance of livestock as proposed by Gordon. Gordon's going to see this and he's going, "Ah, Dave." One of the changes that is easy to support is the FFA or the project animals allowances. That's a good thing. The 35 square foot lot limit I'm really comfortable with, because especially the thing I was concerned about was what happens in HOAs. But HOAs can specifically restrict livestock on their own accord. So if they have city acre lots that they're not comfortable with, then they can do that. The new animal list is very helpful with this animal point system. I think is very well done. The thing I don't like that I'm struggling with the animal point system, I think it's a little confusing at the one and two. So we're just proposing, hey, do a half, a small animal is a half point and a large animal is 1 point. It keeps it cleaner. The chicken issue, of course, move on past that. The code is proposing two animal points for, using this formula, two animals on a 35,000 square foot lot up to an acre lot. And then what I would propose is one animal point for each quarter acre instead of half acre. Because really, the way that they've crafted this, there's really no change in the size of in the large animals that you can allow on a lot. It's still two per acre. So I would propose that you count one animal point for each quarter acre, which would allow you, if you have a 2 acre property, you can handle more animals. So that would give you, you know, I have a little example here that if you have a 1.5 acre parcel, you would be allowed 4 animals under that scenario. In Lehigh, it has a landscape level livestock opportunity there. They have a lot of infrastructure in place. They have some riding trails in place. People have had historic uses down there for a long time. So all of the above, but with Lehigh, the way that they're allowed animals should be a little bit different. And so using the same example, the 1.5 acres property owner, instead of just having two for the first acre, if they have properties over an acre, let that base right be four. and then let them have another animal for each quarter acre, so they could have eight for a 1.5 acre parcel there. So instead of doing quarter acre, I mean do eighth acre increments down there. So you could allow eight per acre.
Let me ask you a question. If we apply these revised standards citywide, do we foresee a pullback from what the current use is, an expansion, or a neutral on an overall basis? I know that there are specific cases where it would be
The biggest livestock animal complaint is oh, that guy has too many heads per acre. You would make that code issue completely evaporate. Okay, very rarely do people complain about the maintenance side of it, because people that have livestock know what they're doing.
Well, is there a connection? Too many heads per acre, is that a perceived maintenance, or is that a real maintenance issue? I mean, is that a reasonable pullback?
There's not a lot of complaint about maintenance.
Okay.
That's the thing. We're not getting a lot of, and it's
so
a code violation.
I'm trying
to
understand why would they complain if there's too many heads, just because there's too many heads?
Because they know the code, and most of the time in Lehigh, they're punking each other because they're mad at their neighbor.
Okay.
I wanted to get to one last item on my list here, and that's the Alex Finter amendment. And I considered that as I put this together, which would allow somebody to obtain a license that would give people the Lehigh level animal point system. So, you know, if somebody in Alex's neighborhood or that area part of town where
Northeast
Mesa, they could apply for a license, get the same level as Lehigh. That way we only have two ratios. We have the base ratio, and then we have the Lehigh level ratio. And so they get the license, and they have to, you know, maintain everything.
Councilmember Higgins?
That license, would that be cost prohibitive, or would that be a...
No, I think that should be more than $10, $15, $50.
Okay.
I don't know what it would cost to administer, but...
Look at the property, make sure it's in the
right
area.
This permit's like $1,300.
Yeah, that's what I don't want to see happen. I don't want to see, you know, grandma have to put out $1,300 so she can have her horse she's had for 20 years.
If somebody wants to exceed the Lehigh ratios and above what the license permits, yeah, sure, I can see that. You're going to want to have a public hearing about
something like
that. That's
an extraordinary
situation. Yeah. It's like putting a dairy in, you know.
Well, because I just wanted to say that, you know, when you look at this map, on a pure acreage basis, I would think District 5 has more acres than the Lehigh area. However, as
but maybe
you
less
had
individual
said,
parcels.
They're all in, most of these are in HOAs. So the HOA already, like my HOA, even though we all have 35,000 square foot lots, says no livestock. So it covers that.
Yeah, I think where that would apply to your area or the county islands that are going to be annexed in, that are horse properties by...
You're going to make that process
by right and by use. Easier. That's where it would affect the majority of your.
And you might even get some people that'd be willing to. And
frankly, that's where we have the problems. Even down in District 2 and District 3, those were historically outside the city, and then county, and they've been brought into the city, and then held to a more restrictive standard.
I just have your item number 6 on your list on the top section.
Yeah.
That's currently today up to 10 per acre. That's not a change, right? You're not changing. That is today's.
Today's
so up to 10.
What did the chicken lobby want?
No, so like
it's
if
actually,
you.
It's actually 10 per half acre. It's 20 per acre.
Okay.
Thank you.
Because I thought that was low.
Yeah.
Okay.
Six would be what's current.
Okay.
Wonderful compromise. Your leadership's been wonderful going through this. I know everything you described, what you've been through, and being able to step back and watch Councilman Richens really get through this. This is exactly what I think would meet the needs of some of those areas outside of Lehigh. It gives an opportunity. In reality, when we did our little street, 40 years, never one complaint. I guarantee you there was more than two horses or livestock per acre. It was because the responsible folks took care of their properties. It was the focal point of the neighborhood every Saturday and Sunday afternoon, kids on strollers and families coming through feeding horses. It can be a wonderful attribute for an area or a neighborhood. So this is a great compromise that I think would serve us well, Mayor. Thanks.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
Well, I'm going to be consistent in what I've done for other things throughout the city when it comes to ordinances and things, as I like to see citywide and not sub areas where they're specific. However, what I would like to see is, rather than just say the Lehigh sub area deal, let that be the license limits. of those that want to do it anywhere in the city, provided they have the appropriate acreage around them, that their neighbors and so forth have that it's an area that historically has that kind of thing, that you get that kind of a permit or license, however you want to go about doing it, but not a cost prohibitive type deal. I get a little uncomfortable when we try to designate a sub area and they're exclusive of all the rest of the city on what they're allowed, and I'm uncomfortable with that. But I understand, because I've lived here my whole life and I know Lehigh. I've been down there a lot. I've had relatives down there, so I know the situation. But when I'm looking citywide, I just don't want to make an elite neighborhood have special conditions. I would like to have consistency throughout the entire city. I'm fine with the Lehigh numbers, but I think that needs to be an option citywide for everybody, license-wise, but make the license apply to everybody, but a minimal license. And otherwise, I'm fine with it.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. When we first looked at this in committee, I voted against the proposal, but I appreciate the additional work that staff has done on this. I think it's Gordon has done an outstanding job on an issue that's difficult at best to deal with. And I am now convinced that Councilmember Richens has at least a PhD in livestock law, and that and I'm persuaded by the compromise that he's proposed here, that I think is a reasonable compromise that acknowledges unique characteristics of the Lehigh area, but also I think provides reasonable regulations in the remainder of the city. And finally, I think what he's proposing here will protect the zebra that is in my district. So I would support moving ahead with the proposal as Councilmember Richens has outlined. Thank you.
Councilmember Summers?
I'll also be supporting this, since we chickened out on the chickens. It was a bad attempt at a joke. You know, I actually take a bit of an opposite approach of what was said earlier about going citywide. There are many mesas, many faces. This is a large community with very different areas. My area is very much a suburban sprawl. We have urban nodes that are developing out in Lehigh, and some other areas scattered through our rural enclaves. And we have to, I think, it would behoove us to recognize that there is no one-size-fits-all, whether it's our zoning regulations or our planning, that we have to address these very unique areas and in many ways celebrate them. We've done that previously in Councilmember Higgins' district with the plan. The name of it escapes me, but there was a lighting Desert issue. Desert Uplands, thank you very much. The Desert Uplands was very unique. It recognized that as a unique area. One of the key issues was lighting, as I recall. They wanted low lighting in order to be able to see the desert views. I think Lehigh is very much one of our hidden gems, if you will. It is a residential area that very much is a rural enclave, and they seem to know what they're doing with their livestock. So I think the compromise that was reached is a very good one, so I will be willing to support that. Thank you.
Yeah, Councilmember Higgins.
Yes, Mayor. I agree with all of Councilmember Richens' suggestions, including the special sub-area requirements for Lehigh, because that was the whole purpose of the sub-area plans, were to call out special areas in Mesa and show that they're unique and have a description and a definition so that they are protected. So I support this in its entirety.
Okay. I share the Vice Mayor's concern about special regulation, simply because I think there are other areas in the city that, although it's not as significant as Lehigh, have the same history and the same situation. I'm thinking, once again, there in District 2 and even over into District 6, this in the southeastern part of the city. And either way, it's sort of it's a Hobson's choice. You're going to burden somebody one way or the other. If you make it citywide, then to me require licenses, then you place an undue burden on the Lehigh area, I believe, because then everybody's got to go in for a license, which I think is unreasonable. if you just include the Lehigh sub-area, then I think there are other pockets in the city that are unduly burdened because they don't live in Lehigh, but they have virtually the same exact situation as Lehigh does. I would hope that as we go through the licensing process, we create some objective standards that that keep neighbor from neighbor. I mean, one of the problems I'm thinking of something Councilmember Fenter said about nobody cares until somebody moves in next to somebody who has horses, and all of a sudden they go challenge it. And I'm hoping that when that person goes in for a license, that their neighbor, just because they don't like them, can show up and somehow block that. There's got to be an objective standard that allows them to keep that right. I would also hope that we can perhaps identify those areas, and there aren't a whole lot. I can think of maybe four or five areas in the entire city that are similar in nature and history and in use to Lehigh. They were county islands. They've been rural. They have decades and decades of livestock use. You know, I look down along Southern. I look up along out in the desert where we have a lot of horse properties that'll soon either are already in or will soon be in the city. And it would seem like as part of those objective standards, we can look at the history and we can look at almost, and I hate to say this because I don't want it on a regulatory, sort of a quasi sub area that do exist around the city, and that those licenses would be easier to obtain if you live in a historic rural livestock area than it would be if you are taking raw desert and you're putting up a subdivision or building a house and then wanting horses. That should be more difficult simply because that isn't the historical use of that property. But when there is a historical use, I think that should carry some weight in whatever license and should be easier to obtain than somebody who lives outside a historic area. To me, there's no perfect solution because we have a big city. And when you have nearly 140 square miles, you're going to have exceptions. And that's why I agree with the vice mayor, because I think you're creating problems, but I don't know that there's an easy solution that doesn't create problems, and I'd like to minimize those. And so I would support treating the Lehigh sub area as different simply because it is different, but hopefully being able to apply those standards on a broader basis to areas that are similar. So I'd be anxious to see how you get the details down to those objective standards for the licenses. If I'm hearing, go ahead, Councilmember Richards.
Maybe the solution to that is a similar group that would come in for a special use permit. They get together and come in together for a
license,
a landscape, because they have the infrastructure in place. You know, it's a known historic area.
Well, I said,
it works because it's a sub area that's been identified already.
It's there. And they've gone through the process
with boundaries defined. And Lehigh also called out, we want our livestock privileges back that we used to have. And so that's why that kind of works this time. But you're absolutely right.
We're talking about that many areas around the city. I mean, realistically, I can only think of four or five. I'm sure there are probably 10 others that are thinking that. But really, there's four or five that I'm familiar with where there is a historical cluster of livestock activity. Councilmember Summers.
I would also bring up that we are due probably in the next year or so for general plan update.
Yeah.
So we will be revisiting this and the opportunity possibly to apply it to those areas as well.
Vice Mayor?
Okay, what if we were to, rather than just say Lehigh area and other neighborhoods with historical use, that they can demonstrate that they have that historical use?
Then they can apply for,
that they can be treated the same as Lehigh. Instead of just spelling out Lehigh all alone, just Lehigh and neighborhoods with historic.
Because if we didn't call it the Lehigh solution, we wouldn't know what to call it.
Yeah. I mean, that's where it came from. But I would feel more comfortable if those neighborhoods who had historic use and demonstrated that
we could call it
fall under the same
use.
Historical livestock use.
Okay. Councilmember Fenter.
And one of the things on the special use permit that we went through, and Gordon probably was leaning towards this, is we did have to demonstrate that it had been there. It was a historical use. It was part of the criteria we used. So.
Councilmember Higgins?
I would just say that I just forgot what I was going to say. But again, the Lehigh sub-area has a sub-area plan. It's very defined borders. I don't think we're prohibiting other uses in other areas, but I don't think just to say and historical areas without them being defined, I think somewhat diminishes the Lehigh sub-area plan.
Well, I think we're just trying to reduce the burden on other areas of the city, including those in your district that would come forward. And what we call it, I don't think really matters as much as we have a framework that allows people to retain rights that they historically have and not create a disproportionate burden across the city.
Except we're not, what we're doing here is we're not diminishing their rights as they currently have them. In fact, they're all getting extra rights because the lot size is going down to 35,000 square feet. What we're doing is allowing them the opportunity to go even over and above what their current rights on their property
is. And that's what I'm saying. We're really only talking, you know, we're talking as though this is on every lot. There's a very few number of areas in the city that this would apply to. You're right. You're exactly right. It's just not that prevalent. But so we're spending a lot of time on what I think are exceptions. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I do have a concern with what the Vice Mayor is suggesting, because I think that if you just say in other historical areas, I think it places an undue burden on staff and creates opportunity for arbitrary decision making, because history is in the eye of the beholder and the residents. And so I think that, you know, I just don't think that's a wise approach. It would place an unfair burden on staff and difficult to administer and to understand. I think what Councilmember Richens has proposed is a reasonable compromise that allows areas like that to come in for the increased ratios where they use permit, and that also would create an opportunity for us to see the pattern in practice that staff has to deal with and may lead us in the future to add additional sub area as we do our general plan or as we modify the ordinance.
I think what we're getting at, and once again, if you really look at it, I think the potential situations that we're really debating here are few and far between. Mm-hmm. I think there are pockets, and there are very, very few areas. As I hear, I think there's general support to establish a Lehigh standard, mm-hmm. whatever we call it. I'd also think that and a licensing right throughout the city, and I think that's what I'm hearing. And I think the devil will be in the details as to what the objective standards are for granting those licenses that will hopefully would avoid the kind of arbitrary decision that Councilmember Kavanaugh is talking about, that there are standards, that they do take into account the historical use of the property and the surrounding property, and that we make it as regulatory light as we can while still maintaining that balance between historic use and those who have come in afterwards.
Okay.
So if that's the direction to move forward, that's what I sense from the majority of the council. Okay, then you got your direction.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Oh, and by the way, on this item, I just want to note that Mr. Mark Freeman and Mr. Larry Pugh were in the audience and were in support of that, and I think we've pretty much covered it. Gentlemen, is that okay? Okay. Thank you.
The actual enabling language.
Yeah. Next item on the agenda is to hear presentation and discuss the aquatics program, the regional pools.
Thank you, Mayor Smith and council members. My name is Mike Holste. I'm the assistant director of recreation operations for City of Mesa. With me today, I have Andrea Moore, and she is our planning and development supervisor, and also Darla Armfield, and she is our recreation supervisor over the aquatics program. In addition, we have Steve Hogan, will be coming up in a few seconds to talk about the some exciting events that are lined up with the aquatics program. And with him is Aaron Muth from the Convention and Visitors Bureau. He'll also be with Steve talking about those activities. First of all, with our aquatics program, our top priority has always been to have safety and water education. And again, we had another successful season in Mesa, and I have to attribute all of that to Darla and her excellent staff. They continue to do an outstanding job with the aquatics program.
Okay. Well, to start off, our first event, as most of you attended, was our Keno Pool grand opening. Keno was a 40-year-old facility, and we were blessed to have the funding to renovate that. So we kicked off our season with a 1,500 person grand opening. I think we underestimated how many people would love to come see Councilman Richens in a what we call a hamster ball. So, and he did a great job, and he basically taught us a new technique, and that was somersaults, and nobody had ever done that before, so now all the guards are copying him. The second large event that we had was the Rhodes Pool grand opening. That was a 30-year-old facility, and we were fortunate to open that up in September. And we had about 300 people come a day, and we also completely filled the Flow Rider up every day. So next, what we have is a graph that kind of shows a comparison of our service circles with our pools that are open in the summer of 2009. As you can see, we plotted out all the pools that are open. A few of the pools are going to be continue to be opened, and that will be Taylor Pool. So the next one, Andrea, just to kind of give you an indication, you can see that in 2009, we do have some spots that are vacant where we actually weren't conducting any kind of service in those areas, which was where the Rhodes Pool was and then where the Skyline Pool will eventually be. So here is kind of an overview of what the attendance was like. As you can see, when we had 10 pools open, we had 101,000 with an average of 10,000 people per season, per pool. In 2009, we had a total of 91,000, which does show a decrease of about 10,000. But you can see that the average use per pool did go up substantially by almost 3,000 per facility. And then the lessons, we had about, in when all 10 pools were open, we had 8,300 with an average of 929 a day. And then it went to 6,200 with an average, again, going up of 1,000. And I'm sorry, that's not per day, that's per pool per season. Then it went up also by 116 people per day per pool. Competitive, that went up substantially to 2,236 when we had 10 pools operating at 224, and then 2,128 when we had 7 pools open, jumping up to 304 with an average of
increase. If I could go back just a bit, the lessons.
Yes.
Yeah, and maybe I was reading and not listening. That's a huge drop.
It is, in considering we closed 4 facilities.
Well, and that concerns me, is because if we go back to what Mike said to begin with, that our main purpose is safety, and
correct.
You know, that goes right to the meat of what we're supposed to be doing and what we try to accomplish. And you know, that's a 25% drop.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas competitive, it seems like people found the pools. But the lessons, they didn't find them.
Yes, we have
feedback as to why that happened.
When you take a swimming lesson, it is $20 for every 2-week session. And there are 4 of those. So when the cost is a little higher for the lessons than it is for the competitive program. The competitive program is about $60 for an 8-week program. So I think what. Some choices.
But did that change between 08 and 09, the cost, or were the costs?
No.
So the main difference, the only difference between 08 and 09 is 4 less pools.
Yes.
Yeah, but we also saw, Darla, correct me if I'm wrong, we saw a big drop-off for whatever reason in the Carson Pool area, isn't that correct, as far as the activity
in that
area?
It did, but that was because Keno opened.
Yeah, but just the combined, I think we have some work to do to kind of get the word out
okay.
in that area because we did see some.
I guess that's
there.
What I'm getting at, because you know the idea of the regional pool is that people would migrate as much as possible. And I think on the competitive scene, I mean that's you know statistically that's virtually the same. You only lose 100. It's a decrease, but basically people migrated.
They did for competitive.
For whatever reason on the lessons, they did not migrate, and
right.
that means that we're not meeting one of our primary objectives, which is to is water safety.
There were some different things that happened. Oh, Brian.
And Mayor, I'm sorry to step in, but one of the other things we noticed in just the summer programs is the economy, I think, had some impact. Families that may have had impacts on the job front now trying to put children through 1, 2, 3, 4 swimming sessions versus same thing in summer sessions, that became a little burdensome for them in terms of the economy, I think, had a real impact this summer on those offerings.
Yeah, and in June, our classes were about 80% full. It dropped down to about 73% in July.
Okay.
So we noticed, and I think that Brian hit the nail on the head, it's and as I was trying to explain our fee structure, is it's a little more cost prohibitive when you're trying to put 4 kids in a family and 4 sets of lessons.
Okay.
Okay. Then reservations, we also noticed a large decline because that's not an essential kind of service. That is a social fun service, and we just didn't have as many businesses come out and reserve our facilities for their social activities that we normally do. Oh, and the one thing that was on there was the 34,000. That, when we eliminated the 18 summer recreation sites, those kids would come and swim for free at our pools daily. And so when we lost those sites, we lost 34,000 visits to the facilities, to the pools. The Virginia Graham Banker, we were very fortunate that we complied before we opened, and that took a tremendous amount of effort on our maintenance department. I want to recognize them. We were very fortunate. We didn't have to tear any drains out, which helped lower our cost to comply per facility. It was a matter of we just had to replace drains and put in some vacuum release switches, and we did have to replumb at Shepherd a little bit. So we did comply.
And just so people understand, that was a law that was passed in result of some drain accidents where
It's an entrapment issue where
held under because of the suction of the drains.
Yes, getting stuck by the suctions of the drain.
Right.
But we were never really at a very large risk because we have dual drains, and the way that our systems, commercial systems, aren't nearly as dangerous as like spas and private kinds of hotels and things like that.
Right.
Then all pools now, since we've renovated and now with roads online, all pools are compliant with the or meet the code requirements for depth. There's County, High School Federation, USA Swimming. The only two that don't are obviously our two older facilities, which are Taylor and Fremont, and we just adjust what we do in those facilities, and we don't allow kids to dive in the shallow ends.
Vice Mayor?
I still try to get clear. The minimum standard, there's the state, there's county. When we had to change the depth on some of our pools, who actually changed that? I'm just trying to remember. The requirement for the depth, for diving depth.
It started off with the county, and then it just kind of adopted, then USA Swimming adopted it, then National High School Federation adopted it. So it was just kind of this rolling effect of anytime you have an end that has starting blocks on it, you have to have a minimum of 5 feet deep water on across all eight lanes.
So what actually started, Maricopa County is the one who got us all started having
depth. Actually, it was state.
Arizona State.
Yeah. And
okay.
Then county matched the state. But we don't have to necessarily meet state. We have to meet county.
Okay. But they triggered a lot of our needs.
I think was around the country. It was happening all about same time. It's just that the county and the state picked up on it. This is not something that's unique to Arizona, though. This was something that was nationwide that was picked up.
That is correct. It is nationwide. Yeah. Our cryptosporidium, we had no incidences and lots of public education. Maintenance did an excellent job keeping our water chemistry up, and it was a very wonderful summer that we didn't have to report to county. It was great. I want to give some recognition to Amy Manis, who created a free swimming suit program. What was happening was that we were having a lot of our more disadvantaged families coming in cutoffs and gym shorts and basically not proper swimming attire, just regular street clothes, and they were swimming. So we were trying to enforce the rule that we do require proper swimming attire. But that was kind of a burden for some of the families to buy swimming suits. So what Amy did was she went to our local vendors and she asked for them to donate their swimming suits that they couldn't sell or didn't sell well. And we also went to the public and we asked for gently used suits. So she was successful in getting over 200 suits. Then that when people came to the facility that they didn't have proper swimming attire, we were able to give them a free swimming suit. So that helped a lot. It helped keep the cleanliness of the pool up, and it also keeps the whole area looking like a nice swimming facility as opposed to maybe something you might see at a lake. The evening lessons, and that also can contribute to some of the things we're experiencing. When we closed Powell, we did lose our evening lesson program there. Fremont is our evening lesson site only at this point, but we are going to move some evening lesson programs over to Taylor and try to continue, because with the working family, it's a little harder for them to get there to the pool during the day, so we've got to start expanding our night programs. We were able to move the night swimming team we moved it over to Stapley, and it did very well. It filled up completely. So we're going to continue to reinvent the way that we offer our programs to meet the demands of the community. The Flow Rider, that obviously opened. We filled it up every single day when we had opened it. We are working with the county right now. They are as with everyone, when you have a new amenity, it takes time to educate everyone. So we are going back to the county in November with lots of video footage of how it operates, how we lifeguard it, how we train on it, and how we educate the public. So we're waiting, since they dictate when we go, we just have a provisional permit at this point. So we're waiting for our final permit so that we can go gangbusters. We're doing some strategic operation right now on the Flow Rider. We're working with Dobson High School swim team, et cetera, just trying to keep the training going, keep the guards up on their skills to run that ride. Oh, I just did that.
Okay. So as Darla touched upon, due to the service circles or the regional concept, we noticed that with the planned closure of or discontinuing the services at the Taylor Pool would leave a void in the South Central Mesa. So we're recommending that we keep Taylor open until we can find another pool to go into that area. And so that will fill, as you can see on the future regional plan, that will fill the South Central Mesa. And then we're also looking at a future pool down in the Southeast Mesa as well. And we hope that when all those are developed, then that will give us a complete regional concept. Okay.
And I talked about that. I talked about expanding evening lessons to Taylor.
Right. One last thing is we did a study of where our pool users are coming from throughout Mesa, and we found that approximately 900 of our registered uses are coming from outside of the Mesa boundaries. As you can see on this map, this is a use map. These are actually by households. Each one of these triangles or octagons or hexagons, I'm sorry, will represent a household, and each household is approximately, let's see, each of the triangles represents about 3.4 uses, and each of the hexagons represents a 2.6 uses. And so what we're recommending is for the next year is possibly a non-resident fee of approximately 20% increase for those non-residents. And then that would result in about I think for swim lessons, it'd be about a $4 increase, and for competitive, it'd be about a $12 increase for non-residents.
Do you have any idea how that would affect participation? Do you think you feel comfortable that 20% will not be a burden that will push them away, or do you think that they can we can absorb that and still have people?
It's hard to tell at this point. We're hoping that the quality, because those particular areas, I mean, they're quality programs, and we're hoping that the residents would continue to want to come. But
they already have options, is what you're saying,
they're
choosing Mesa, mm-hmm. and we're assuming, and when you look at how far some people travel,
exactly,
they're choosing Mesa because they must like something about what we're doing.
Gilbert has a non-resident for their programs,
okay.
And so does Tempe.
Okay,
so we're not the only ones.
Yep. Councilmember Summers,
thank you. Out of curiosity, on the competitive team sports, how many of those, particularly in the county areas on the east side and maybe on the north side of Gilbert, are associated with the school districts? Because the school districts aren't contiguous with Mesa. School district is not the same as City of Mesa, neither is the Gilbert school district. The lines are not contiguous. I always have to remind people of that. We don't run the schools, it just happens to have the same name. So how many of those are coming in for the competitive programs as a result of the fact that they may live in the county, but they're in the Mesa School District, or they live in the town of Gilbert, but they're part of the, or Gilbert School District, so they're swimming in Mesa pools.
So, all right, so your question is how many that are participating in our programs?
Is it competitive?
No, this is the city competitive. This is not the interscholastic.
All right, so we're not talking about the same thing.
Yes.
Then my question's answered.
So in the summertime, and I think Steve's going to come up and talk, but we ran 53 recreational meets. We ran the state APRA swimming meet that used to be held at ASU, and it moved it to Keno, and it actually facilitated that meet beautifully. Then we also did Grand Canyon State Games for synchro, so there's a lot of interest, and I think Steve's going to echo what I'm saying, to continue with our competition programs at Keno, the state and regional kinds of competition. It's been getting quite a bit of recognition. And just this weekend, we hosted the 1A through 3A meets at Keno, which I think Steve will also talk about.
Do you have any other questions for Darla?
Councilmember Finter.
Well, not questions, but comments before we move into this next section. I want you to know that coming into this, the prior council had passed this regional program, and I actually really support it. It makes sense. It consolidates. It's a smarter way of doing business, but it was obvious to me, representing that south central central area, that there was quite a gap in that area. So really concerned, and I had the opportunity to visit with staff and find tell them what my concerns were as we closed the fifth pool, which would have been Taylor. And I've been so impressed with staff, with this council, our city manager, to be able to go and look at this problem. And from what I have seen, a lot of innovation being used, recycling old equipment, looking at the fees for ADA, just a really smart way of doing business to try and keep this Taylor program open. And it makes a lot of sense. And what I found in researching it, it wasn't just about that Taylor area. That was going to have a significant impact throughout the aquatics program, especially on the east side. So my appreciation to you and to everyone that's been involved to be able to think outside the box and really take the challenge and make a difference here. We also had quite a bit of citizen input in that Taylor area and other families and parents around. Mrs. Vicki Overstreet led that effort and involvement. And so another thing to celebrate is the citizen participation in the process and having staff being so responsive to those concerns and needs. And this is one of those things I think we can take away as a council and as a city as a whole to say that this was a great solution to a challenging problem. So thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you.
Councilmember Summers?
I'll echo those statements as well, because many of my residents, my constituents, were impacted by the closing of Taylor, and Brimhall really being the only southeast Mesa pool currently that created a lot of crowding issues, and I did hear about it. I'm very pleased with staff and Mr. Brady and your office and being able to work with the budget and keeping the capital costs reasonable for the other pools so that we can continue to keep the Skyline Pool project online and fully funded, and I look forward to breaking ground on that project here in the very near future. That should help in a lot of the southeast area. Thank you.
Vice Mayor.
And just the way things have evolved in the age of pools and the needs that we have and going to this regional model, my district is the one where we've been affected the most as far as closing of Mesa Junior and Powell, where we're creating that gap. And I think it's important that we make a commitment that we are going to proceed with that regional model and make sure everybody understands we intend to, as soon as feasibly possible, get that pool around the Mesa High area that fills that void. So it's important for me to convey that and make sure I have support that is what we're going towards, is to make sure that pool comes as soon as we can feasibly make it possible.
And I'd like to add on to what the Vice Mayor said, just so that there's clarification, people understand. These pools are closing down not out of some act of desperation, or in many cases not because of a budgetary issue. This is a program, because pools have a limited life. And over the last few years, we as a city have had to make some difficult decisions as to whether we take, for example, a Mesa Junior, which is very site restricted and would be extremely expensive to update and to bring up to current standards, and frankly to replace a worn out pool. And it has some structural and other issues. So the questions that the previous council and staff has struggled with for many years is, where do you make the investment for the long term? And that was what caused the regional pool system to be developed, is that as these pools, some of which were built 30, 40, 50 years ago, came to their natural end, the question is, we can spend a lot of money and get a little use, or we can invest in a pool that meets current standards, and some of it was as simple as the inability to have a meet there because it didn't meet these depth requirements. And so as we go through, these are planned closures that are meant to be a transition to a long-term program. And, you know, we found some gaps in that program, and this program is not set in stone as we're experiencing here with Taylor, where we tweak it as we go. You know, because 2009 was the first summer that we really had the full impact of the transition to the regional system. You know, 2008, Keno was closed down, and 2009 we closed down some others. So we're really looking at this data and trying to figure out the best way to balance this transition. I think in the next 5, 6, 10 years, we'll have a pool inventory that'll last us for another 30 years, and we'll fill all the parts of the city, and I'm happy for that. So I would like to echo what the other council members have said about staff and their willingness and ability to look at the information, to adjust, and to look at the long term. I've gotten a lot of feedback also from people saying, gee, the city's in such bad shape that we closed down a couple of these pools, and I try to say, even if we were in good shape, we would still be going through this transition. These pools wear out, and you know you can't keep using them forever. So do you throw good money after for a temporary fix, or do you go to a long-term program? We have a long-term program in place that I feel very comfortable with. But I would echo what Vice Mayor said about a couple of those gaps which are not funded yet, like the South Central, the Mesa High Area Pool, and the Southeast, which we're going to have to look at in the next few years of getting funding to where we can fill those gaps. Mr. Hogan? Why don't you get us up to date on some exciting things that are going on?
All right. Good morning, Mayor and Council. First off, I want to echo a lot of your comments here. Darla, before she leaves, has done an outstanding job. You know, we have a great partnership between the schools and the city that benefits everyone in our community. And Darla has really kind of, you know, overseen that and done a great job with that. So we want to thank her. Again, we utilize these pools for our competitive programs for the high school. We also do it for our junior high instructional programs and PE units, and it's been great there. Another thing that's been happening at other pools, we have already had the Skyline Invitational, the Mesa Relays, and coming up this Saturday at Keno Pool, we have the HoHoCom-sponsored City Meet. Those are events that have always taken place in Mesa, but to have them at a pool like Keno has really enhanced those events. But what the addition of the Keno pool has also done now is last weekend we held the 1A through 3A state championships. Great meet, set record times in almost every event, a great venue for that. Coming up in 2 weeks, we have the region meet. We have the 4A state meet. The following week, we have the 5A state meet. So we are drawing a lot of attention to Mesa. Again, it's a great pool to utilize there. The addition of Skyline Pool will just enhance that in the future. Another thing that's happened from the addition of this is that we have a master swim program. And master swimming is anywhere from someone who's learning to swim that's over 18 to a Olympic qualifier. We have those people out here. So on November 14th, Rowdy Gaines, former Olympian, will be here putting on a clinic. That'll again draw more attention, more publicity to Mesa, and it'll be a neat event for all of our citizens. A few other things, and one of the things was just in Arizona Central today, I read that we have been granted the National Masters Championships in 2011, in April of 2011. That's a huge meet, a huge benefit to the city of Mesa, and Aaron in a minute will tell you a little bit about the economic impact, but that's going to bring about 2,000 out-of-state visitors to Mesa, staying at our hotels, utilizing this pool on about a 5-day event here in Mesa. We are also in the bid right now, or in the running for bids for National Synchronized Swimming, the NAIA College Championships, the NCAA Division III Championships in both 2011 and 2012, Synchronized Swimming Championships, and potentially the Synchronized Swimming Olympic Qualifying. So not only are these pools helping, you know, meet the safety needs, the recreational needs, the high school competitive needs, it's also now hopefully becoming a economic generator for the city of Mesa. So I'm going to let Aaron talk a little bit about that.
You want to pass that handout? Yeah. Steve's passing around a little handout right now that's going to show the projected tax revenues from the bed tax and a couple of estimated economic impact.
You have one that you can stick on the Elmo?
I did teach driver's ed, but I don't know how to run this. You know, that's
a
As everyone knows, estimated economic impacts, primarily theory. There's 8,000 different ways to measure it. What we do is we use the Phoenix Regional Sports Commission and the National Association of Sports Commission's formula. What is it? It's a very simple direct impact. These only take into account the participants come from outside Maricopa County, specifically for these upcoming swimming events. As you see there, the largest one is the Masters Short Course Nationals in 2011, which has been announced as awarded to us last month at the United States Aquatic Symposium in Chicago. That's a major, major amateur event, as Steve was saying. It's been held in prestigious cities in the past. Atlanta, Georgia is going to be the host this year. Austin, Texas recently. Mace is definitely on the map. We're not only competing for these large-scale events, we're winning. And in preference, above you see the room night estimates. That's kind of the easier estimated economic impact model because those are numbers you can actually track. I think everyone assumes when out-of-state travelers come to the town, they stay in restaurants, use gas, rental cars, that sort of thing. But the hotel room night numbers are something we can directly track. And you see that up above. And those are the tax breakouts from the 12.02% tax revenue with the state's cut, county cut, city cut, and then the bed tax.
Okay. Councilmember Finter.
Yeah, I just didn't want to miss the opportunity. I don't know if you're continuing with your presentation, but to celebrate this relationship that we have going between the City of Mesa and the Mesa Public Schools. A lot of people don't understand how that works. It's probably one of the best models around where we combine and use resources and locations to achieve the goals that we provide and the services to the citizens of Mesa. I wanted to personally thank the mayor and Mr. Brady for meeting with Mr. Hogan and Dr. Cowan and being able to encourage and improve those relationships. And I think all the citizens of Mesa benefit by this, the relationships that we have developed there. So thank you so much to the schools and the support and everything that you do. We couldn't do it without this joint combination. So thank you.
If I could just comment and thank you guys for that. And also when we went back to Chicago to receive this bid and we talked about that partnership, and it is pretty much the envy of most people around the country. And the ability to build these pools right now is, and when they see those, not only were we bidding and receiving a bid, we had people coming to us say, can you bid for this? So that partnership is working well that way.
And I'd like to echo that it's been a great relationship for decades and decades, and I hope it to continue. And I would like to say that Steve Hogan provided one of the most enjoyable days in my short tenure as mayor. Normally when people come into my office for meetings, I've gotten to where I always wait for the ask. There's always an ask involved. And Steve Hogan came in one day, and I didn't know really what it was, and I kept waiting for the ask. And there was no ask. The whole meeting was just great positive news about all the efforts that that his staff and the city staff, the Convention and Visitors Bureau staff, were going to try and get some of these things. And I don't know that we had actually been awarded anything yet. There was just a lot of great ideas and great positive things going on, and it was it's been a great effort, a very positive effort, and a combination of the different entities getting together. So thank you so very much.
Okay.
Appreciate that. Okay, thank you. All right, the next item on our agenda is to hear reports on meetings and our conferences attended. Councilmember Summers.
One meeting, Mayor, that you'd be interested in, I attended, I believe it's going to be the last inaugural board meeting of the Arizona Aerospace Institute. The Institute has now approved a mission and vision statement. They put together a preliminary but scalable organizational structure. They have established some early goals, including planting a flag, which we fully anticipate to be here, somewhere here in the East Valley, and to begin to advocate and look at clusters of aerospace industry and how they may make a positive impact on the high-wage jobs and the research and development that aerospace has here in Arizona. And the next step really is to put this together in a plan that should be made public shortly, but also to bring to Speaker Adams to get support through the legislature for this very important industry, not only to Mesa, but the state as well.
Thank you. Vice Mayor.
Yes, Mayor, thank you. Yesterday we had a news conference in downtown Phoenix where they introduced the Metro Arts and Culture Ride Guide, which is very beneficial in identifying activities all along the light rail in each city. And in our case, it also follows the BRT down Main Street, so we include venues in Mesa. So this is going to be available throughout the valley in convention visitor bureaus and so forth, hotels, where people can pick up this guide and see what they can attend culturally throughout the valley, basically through Phoenix, Tempe, and Mesa. And so very worthwhile. We had a nice intro of that yesterday.
Good. Thank you. Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, I attended a reception at the Arizona Historical Society Museum last night, where they have just opened the Sandra Day O'Connor House that they moved from its location in Paradise Valley, brick by brick. All 6,000 adobe bricks were relocated to the Arizona Historical Society Museum near Papago Park. It was very cool. So,
well, adobe makes things cool.
It's
a good
very interesting, and I learned that they actually put a top of milk. Milk is the top coat on an adobe building. Isn't that a fun fact for the day? Literally, painted, yes. Anyway, so it's fun.
I'm trying to figure what form of milk. Milk with mud or?
No, milk. Just like they use it like a whitewash.
Okay.
With paint, milk coat. I have no idea why. I didn't read that chart. But go out there. They have a great Sandra Day O'Connor exhibit in the museum itself, and it was very fun.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to remind those on the Public Safety Committee meeting, following the executive session, there is a Public Safety Committee meeting. Also want to remind Council this Saturday we have MACFest from 10 to 4 p.m., continuing every Saturday through April. Also this Saturday is GAIN, so hopefully the members of Council can make it. I've been contacted to be available to go out and visit with some of the neighborhoods who are getting together on that evening. Also want to remind the Council that next Thursday, this meeting will be our Council Strategic Initiatives meeting. We're going to use that as an opportunity to sit down and review the strategic initiatives. That will be at the Red Mountain Library. We're going to begin at 7 a.m. earlier, a little bit earlier than we have on this day, because we have a lot of things to get accomplished that day. One of those, which will be reviewing the November 2nd agenda. But as soon as we're done with that, we'll go into a discussion about the Council's strategic initiatives. You'll be getting in your packet today some materials on that that reviews the strategic initiatives, things that have been accomplished so far by the Council towards those strategic initiatives, as well as things that we're looking forward to accomplishing, things that are on their way. We've talked with Council. So a lot of discussion and kind of reviewing the strategic initiatives and getting input as we move forward over the next couple of years regarding the strategic initiatives. And then just kind of looking forward out into the future, a reminder again, we have City Hall at the Mall on the 31st of October from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Superstition Springs. And then, Mayor, at this time, Mr. Butler, why don't you come forward and brief the Council on the hearing last night, or the conclusion of the line siding committee for the Abel Moody line.
Mayor, Council, good morning. Just want to give you an update. Late last night, that's okay, you can all see me. Late last night, the Line Sign Commission of the Corporation Commission took a vote on the Abel Moody line that the Council has discussed in the past. The vote ended up being 6-2 for the Ryan Road alignment, which was the city's acceptable choice for this. We had fought against the Germain Road alignment because of the impact to the residential neighborhoods, Queens Park, and also potential impacts on the Gateway area. And fortunately, the Line Sign Committee heard our concerns and voted 6-2 to go with the Ryan Road alignment. And just so you know, the two dissenting votes were holdouts for the Rittenhouse Railroad alignment that also we were fine with that alignment as well.
Okay. So, Mayor and Council, just quickly, I just want to thank Scott and the staff who participated in that. We had to react pretty quickly and get our information together. Also want to thank the residents from Queens Park who assisted and others in getting the information to the committee. And then we'll obviously have to go through the commission process, but hopefully we'll be able to get a reasonable location for this line.
The final decision does rest with the Corporation Commission. They'll probably consider that in December or January. And just wanted to also recognize Debbie's staff and Bill Table and Utilities and our outside counsel, who really did a great job representing the city's interest on that.
And Councilmember Summers has a question.
Not so much a question as a statement. I'd like to thank you, Scott, for all your efforts that you put into it, as well as Brent Stoddard, Scott Rigby, Brian Raines, who I know have been working on this quite a bit. And what people don't realize is that the Germain alignment would have created undue burden on the Queens Park residents, to the point where it was pretty clear that a pole, quite frankly, was going to end up in somebody's backyard, a 115-foot pole. It just wasn't acceptable. It would also have had some negative impact on economic development there. We'll be hearing a case very soon about the potential of a movie studio coming forward that went through planning and zoning last night. I watched it on streaming video on Mesa Channel 11, and we'll be seeing that one very shortly. And one of their key concerns was, I'm not going too far, Debbie, was that this line would have really nixed that project. So very well done for the residents and for economic development around that airport. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Any requests to speak, Ms. Barker?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay.
Move for adjournment.
Well,
or to go into executive session.
We have a motion to move into executive session. We have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We'll now move into executive session. Thank you very much.